It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Can you put a price on your family's best friend? While the relationship between you and your dog might feel priceless, how do you decide how much to spend on them for things like food, vet bills, doggy daycare? And how much value do they bring to your life? Can that be measured? In a new book, a Wisconsin author uses the tools of economics to understand the human-canine relationship. You could join in at 800-642-1234. How much do you spend on caring for your dog or dogs? Do you pay premium for the best food and care for your pet? Does having a dog increase your quality of life? How? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. David Weimer is the Edwin E. Witte Professor of Political Economy at UW-Madison's La Follette School of Public Affairs. He's co-author of the new book, Dog Economics, Perspectives on Our Canine Relationships. Dave, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
I want to get this out there right up front. People might think, oh no, an economist is going to come along and take all the fun out of dogs. You are a longtime dog companion. You like dogs, right?
I love dogs, and my co-authors had many, many dogs and raises them to be guides.
Now, there are a lot of books out there about dogs, the care of them, the history, sociology, things like that. Economic books about dogs. What led you to want to tackle that?
Well, it all began with a conversation with the economist at the Food and Drug Administration who has to do cost-benefit analyses of new regulations. So in 2007, there were a lot of dogs who died because of adulterated pet food. There was an ingredient from China that had been adulterated with melamine, and that resulted in several thousand pet dogs in the United States dying. So Congress gave the Food and Drug Administration authority to regulate pet food. But to do that, they have to write regulations, which requires them to justify the regulations with cost-benefit analyses. And the complaint was they knew how to value changes in human mortality risk, but they had no measure for dogs. So I took that as a challenge to come up with a measure using what we call stated preference methods. In other words, we survey people and through a survey experiment try to elicit their willingness to pay for mortality reductions for their dogs.
And that was where you started. And that illustrates, I think, one of the points of the book. It's about dogs, but it's also a window to learn economic concepts through our love of dogs.
Well, that's what we hope. We've written it so that if someone has had a little bit of prior exposure to economics, they should have no trouble. And we added a glossary for those who have had no prior exposure.
Now, an interesting thing that I hadn't thought of in this way until I read your book is we could think of a dog like any commodity, like a refrigerator, right? I'm going to figure out how much I want to pay, what features I want, what I don't want, things like that. Then I go out and make a decision. But obviously, I think obviously, the dog at our house is not a commodity or not just a commodity anymore. It has a very different meaning than my refrigerator or what have you. Can you talk about that strange role of a dog?
Yes, yes. One of the fascinating things from an economic perspective is dogs are both commodities and family members. Mm-hmm. About almost half of American households have dogs, and well over 80% of those households view dogs as family members. So you've got this strange commodity that's both something that can be bought, sold, owned, but yet people both consider their dogs family members often and act as if they consider them family members.
Now, I could imagine a very non-nuanced kind of economic approach saying, well, this is irrational. You're taking resources away from your human family members, spending them on this non-human household resident. You don't really get anything out of it. So it is irrational economically to be a dog owner. You put a little more nuance into the book.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it is expensive to be a dog owner in two ways. One is the monetary cost, which on average in the U.S. is about $1,500 a year. But there's also what economists call opportunity cost. So when you have a dog, your travel is more complicated, your schedule is more complicated. where you can live may be restricted. Even who your romantic partners are may be affected. So there are both monetary and opportunity costs. On the other hand, there are great benefits. We know the companionship benefit. That's obvious to people who have dogs. But there are all sorts of associated health benefits as well. Meeting your neighbors, so social capital. Mm-hmm. You have to walk your dog, so you get exercise that you might not otherwise have gotten. Just petting a dog can reduce stress. And then, of course, we have to balance that. Dogs can cause injuries. I know my wife's been pulled over a couple times when our dog was still a puppy and suffered some small injuries, and that can happen.
We are talking about the economics of dogs and our relationship with them. Dave Weimer is with us from UW-Madison's La Follette School of Public Affairs, co-author of the new book, Dog Economics, Perspectives on Our Canine Relationships. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions for our guest, or you can make a statement about the value of the dog in your life, in your family. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Those cost-benefit analyses you just mentioned changed a lot a few years ago, you write in the book, because of the COVID-19 pandemic and being at home a lot more. How did that shift our decisions about dogs?
Well, that changed the opportunity costs, right? If you were home, you didn't have to worry about how you were going to walk your dog and what was going to happen when your pup when you were away, if your puppy was going to eat everything in the house. And also, the value of the companionship was higher. We couldn't associate as freely with our friends and other people. So that changed the calculation considerably and resulted in a blip in ownership of dogs.
And there's concern, I know, anecdotally at least, that, well, did people who made those decisions in those unique conditions, now things are back to normal-ish. Have we seen people make the tough decision to give up dogs more?
Well, we are seeing it, and part of it is economic pressure. We are back to what had been the normal for quite a while. Every year, about 3 million dogs enter shelters for various reasons, and about 400,000 of them are euthanized. That's a large number of dogs. Initially, the initial fear of a surge didn't occur, but it's gradually gone back to where it was before the pandemic.
Now, you mentioned pet food regulation as one element where economics definitely plays into this. Another one is regulation of how animals are raised, so-called puppy mills here in Wisconsin, around the country. A lot of laws have come up over the years. An interesting thing there is the cost-benefit analysis of that kind of regulation changes depending on the value we place on dogs. And that, you write, treating them as just a form of property to something other than just property has really evolved over the years. Can you talk about that a little?
Yes. And the regulation of the creation of puppies is very complicated because there are very different sorts of providers. Mm. And many states have very good laws, but almost no states enforce them effectively. Inspections that nominally are supposed to occur every 6 months typically happen every few years in states like Wisconsin. Part of the problem from a political economy perspective also is the regulation tends to be housed in departments of agriculture, and their incentive is production. Mm-hmm. And production is not always the right thing for dogs, because dogs can be abused in the process, and excess puppies can be created that end up in shelters. So it's a very difficult area both to understand and to think about what kind of regulation would be effective.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Chris is with us in Belmont. Chris, hi.
Hi. You were talking about the economics, and we have a young dog, not quite two, hunting dog, that is very sick right now, and Doc thinks it's blastomyoma, that we spent close to $900 on a Tuesday, that if it would have been an older dog, like a couple of years ago, we had a couple that cancer, put them both down within 3 weeks of each other, that we would have put him down. But right now we're trying to save this dog's life because he's young and we love him very much. And he's going through a lot, and we would never do this to an older dog. And so I understand the cost effectiveness here. It's hard.
Chris, thank you so much for sharing that story. Best to your family and your dog. This is one of the toughest decisions that dog owners can have, Dave.
Yes, Chris. I mean, that is a really tough decision. And there is this question about what's best for the dog. It's a little bit similar to the problem we face when one of our relatives can no longer make health decisions, say because they have dementia or are in a coma or something, and we have to make a decision for them about what sort of care will be given. And I think norms have changed over time. The tendency we had with grandma was to spend whatever we can to save her, do whatever we can to extend her life. That used to not be the case with dogs. And I think increasingly it is, partly because dogs are more often viewed as really important family members. And many people now have health insurance, which makes it possible to spend more on end-of-life care. I think it's a very difficult question, what's best for the dog.
Chris, thanks for sharing that story, and good luck to you. We're talking to Dave Wymer, professor at UW-Madison's La Follette School of Public Affairs, talking about his new book. He's the co-author. It's called Dog Economics, Perspectives on Our Canine Relationships. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How did you decide to get a dog if you have one right now? Did you factor in the initial cost, the ongoing costs, or did you just fall in love with a dog and go for it and hope for the best? Have you ever paid extra for a puppy of a particular breed? Did you adopt a dog during the COVID pandemic? What is the value to you of the dog in your life? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up the conversation with Dave Wymer from UW-Madison's La Follette School of Public Affairs. We're talking about his new book, Dog Economics, Perspectives on Our Canine Relationships. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about how economics applies to dog-human relationships? Do you pay for pet health insurance yourself? Has it come in handy? Do you spoil your dog, spend a lot of money and time and resources on it? Is that okay? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Eric is with us in Milwaukee. Hi, Eric.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Fine.
Good. What did you want to bring up?
Well, first of all, I want to make sure that people check out the breed of dog that fits their lifestyle. And then second, I want to know if the economist has taken into account the amount of treat we buy our dogs. Me and my neighbors both agree, whenever we go into a store, we're always looking at dog treats. My dog has more treats in the house than I do.
Eric, thanks a lot. Both great question. Now, you look in the book, Dave, at how people, we'll get to the treats in just a minute, but how people evaluate breeds and fitting their lifestyle, how much thought goes into that? Is it worth extra expense for particular breeds? Could you talk about the economics there?
Yeah, it's very interesting. Breeds do make a difference, but there's quite a bit of evidence that within breeds, there's a lot of individual variation. There's a study group collaborative called Darwin's Ark that collects survey data on people's dogs and then does genetic studies. And they find that there's a lot of genetic variation within breed, more than might be expected, and behaviors differ within breed more than might be expected. One of the interesting things from an economic perspective is that there seems to be fads in dog breeds. And there's some research that ties these fads to movies. Mm-hmm. So, for example, the original 101 Dalmatians led to a boost in the number of people who wanted Dalmatians as dogs, for example. And this has happened repeatedly. So partly breeds are fads. I think Eric is correct that you should take account. I think that we have a standard poodle who's very strong, and probably if we were to get another dog, it would be a smaller poodle. So my wife wouldn't be pulled over when she's walking the poodle. So I think Eric is right. You want to think hard about what kind of dog to get. I think size is the most important feature, because there's so much variation in personality with inbreed.
Eric, thanks a lot for that call. Eric also mentioned treats. You've got a case study of liver treats and price setting in the book, but the economics of dog treats, it's a big deal. Eric doesn't have money for his own snacks, it sounds like.
Right. I sympathize with Eric. It's hard not to give your dog treats, and our dog now basically can only eat lamb-based food, and we've just discovered lamb hearts, and the dog goes crazy over them. It's like your kids, right? You want to give them treats, but you know that too many can be bad. So,
Eric, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Talking to UW-Madison's Dave Weimer, co-author of the new book, Dog Economics, Perspectives on Our Canine Relationships. I want to look into the future a little bit, Dave, as you do in the last chapter of the book. Now, we're talking about breeds, right, and purebred and whatever. Well, now here comes genetic science. What are you watching for when it comes to, hey, maybe we can get that breed, but edit out some of the flaws that came from inbreeding? Or can we combine from different things to get the traits we want? A brave new world of dog decisions to make.
Yes, it is a brave new world. Clearly, genetic altering of breeding can be very powerful. However, we also now have some cloning going on. Mm-hmm. And you can imagine people thinking, well, if I could raise my kid again, would I do it differently? Well, with a dog, because of their shorter lifespans, you could imagine someone thinking, well, could I do better with that dog the next time?
Or even recreate that awesome experience with that dog.
Or recreate the same experience. That's right. That's right. So I think it is a brave new world.
And also, you are watching for maybe a continuing evolution. We talked earlier about, you know, our attitudes toward dogs changing from their property, do whatever you want with them, to they're more than property, and our customs and our laws and regulations changing over time. What are you watching for in the future?
Well, you know, if we look at the history, the anti-vivisectionists in England really started us off on avoiding cruelty to animals, and in particular dogs. And many states have adopted, most states, all the states actually, have adopted laws that prevent outright cruelty to animals. But end-of-life decisions are still left to the owner and, to some extent, veterinarians. And it'll be interesting to see if the professional norms within veterinary science change so that they will be less willing to euthanize, for example. That could pose some serious problems.
And then I want to go, we've been looking at the future. Let's go back in time. You also use some economic concept to examine why wolves started hanging out with people and became dogs. And there's a lot of tricky game theory here, but basically both sides were getting something out of it.
Yes. I mean, there were a few reasons wolves would hang around that weren't beneficial to people, like stealing game, right? But a lot of the other interactions that occurred were mutually beneficial. So providing warming to each other, aiding in hunting, a whole slew of other possible explanations. And originally, when I looked into this, I thought, oh, well, you know, evolution is so slow that how could we go quickly from a wolf to a dog? But there have been some experiments in Russia with foxes, and within six generations, they were able to breed foxes that behave like dogs. Huh. So the process could have been much faster than we might imagine.
Now, as we wrap up, Dave, there's a category of listener out there feeling really left out, and I'm talking about the cat people out there. I understand there may be a sequel in the works.
Well, not Not from us.
Oh, okay.
We're dog people. We're also a little bit seniors. So, but I think people would be interested in seeing a similar analysis for cats.
Mm-hmm. But that might be a very different equation, because we were just talking before the show. Cats came along much later in human terms as domesticated animals.
Yes, they probably came around when we started agriculture, helping us keep the rodents under control. So... whereas dogs are another maybe 5 or 10,000 years longer experience with humans.
And finally, you're hopeful, I think, that the dog economics book could be a bonus textbook for people teaching.
Well, I would hope so. Probably about half of the kids in their classes have had dogs or have dogs. And it'd be much more interesting than widgets.
Dave, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I've been talking to David Wymer, professor of political economy at UW-Madison's La Follette School of Public Affairs. We talked to him today about his new book. He's the co-author. It's called Dog Economics: Perspectives on Our Canine Relationships. There's still time for you to share your story of the value of the dog or dogs in your life. You can email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. If we had a couple few good stories there, I could share them on the show tomorrow or maybe later next week. Again, email ideas@WPR.org with your dog story. Send pictures, too, while you're at it. I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time. You're listening to the Ideas Network on Wisconsin Public Radio.